It's 6 Eastern, 3 o'clock Pacific.
Why aren't they in jail right now? They brutally attacked a New York City police officer.
Coast to coast and around the world from the America Out Loud Talk Radio studios.
Our criminal justice system is upside down. It fails every day.
It's time for The Truth Be Told with Booker Scott.
Well, after 15 months of investigations in the House of Representatives, a failed vote to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas, and one narrow vote that impeached Mayorkas, it was all over in a matter of 3 hours in the Senate. The Senate failed to take care of their constitutional obligation that they swore an oath to. They didn't hear any of the evidence from 15 months of House of Representatives work. And like that, it was over. I said it would be 24 to 48 hours. I didn't expect only 3 hours. I'm Booker Scott, and this is The Truth Be Told on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining us here, and at this hour is brought to you by Gold Co. Just go to BookerLikesGold.com to find out about purchasing precious metals, gold and silver. And by the way, you may qualify for up to $10,000 of free silver. Just go to BookerLikesGold.com to find out more about that. And so this was a very disappointing day in the Senate of the United States of America. And why was it so disappointing? Well, the Senate has an obligation to hear the testimony and hear the evidence about what Mayorkas is alleged to have done. There were two articles of impeachment, and neither one of them were heard. It came to the Senate, and it left as quick. And unfortunately, what does that say about the Senate and politics in America and in Washington, D.C.? The House of Representatives, made up of 435 people, they are the people that represent us, the people. The senators represent states, not the people. The people decided to impeach Mayorkas through all of the evidence that they had gathered over 15 months. They sent it to the Senate, and 21 other times they had sent it to the Senate. And in all instances, all 21 of them, the Senate heard the evidence, at least heard the evidence. What are we supposed to rule on? Because in an impeachment, the Senate becomes a courtroom. It's no longer the U.S. Senate, it is a courtroom. And the senators are the jury. Yet this jury decided not to hear anything. And it was straight up and down party lines, except for Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who also, she voted present on the first article of impeachment. So what they ended up doing was a disservice to the American people. From now on, I guess whoever is in power in the Senate can just say, well, we don't want to hear your articles of impeachment. So now who has the power? Did the Senate just effectively take the power from the people? And even more than that, did the party in power in the Senate take that authority and the power away from all American people? There was much more at stake in this hearing and in this impeachment that took place in the Senate than just a yes or no to convict Alejandro Mayorkas. Because I never thought Mayorkas was going anywhere. He was never going to be convicted and removed. That was never a possibility. But what the Senate has done here, it sets a precedent, and a very dangerous precedent that can be used forever now because of what Chuck Schumer and the Democrats did.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons are commanded to keep silent under pain of imprisonment while the Senate of the United States is convened as a court of impeachment to consider the articles of impeachment against Alejandro N. Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security.
That is the Senate Sergeant of Arms Karen Gibson there with hear ye, hear ye, just like a court. And they want to make sure that it's important. That's why they hear ye. It's a different thing. There's nothing else going on in the Senate now. They are supposed to be paying attention to the evidence because they are taking on a very serious question here. But they didn't do it that way. That's not what happened in this impeachment hearing. Senator Chuck Schumer quickly said, we're not going to deal with this. We're going to put up a motion to dismiss on both the first and the second articles of impeachment.
Of order in the order raised and the motion to dismiss. Further, that if Senator Schumer or his designee makes a motion to dismiss the second article of impeachment, that the motion be subject to only one point of order, that there be up to 60 minutes for debate, concurrently and equally divided, on the motion to dismiss and the points of order, and that following the use or yielding back of that time, the Senate vote in relation to the points of order in the order raised and the motion to dismiss.
And so Schumer there is going over what the Democrats are planning to do. You see there that he had offered some debate time to the Republicans. The Republicans denied that. They didn't want to debate the fact that they were going to dismiss it. But they did want to object, and an objection did come from Missouri Senator, former Attorney General of the state of Missouri, Eric Schmidt.
Reserving my right to object, to dismiss or table articles of impeachment against Secretary Mayorkas without a trial here today or in committee is an unprecedented move by Senator Schumer. Never before in the history of our republic has the Senate dismissed or tabled articles of impeachment when the impeached individual was alive and had not resigned. As Senator Schumer said in 2020, quote, a fair trial has witnesses. A fair trial has relevant documents as part of the record. A fair trial seeks the truth. Nothing more, nothing less. I will not assist Senator Schumer in setting our Constitution ablaze and bulldozing 200 years of precedent. Therefore, I object.
So Chuck Schumer tells you what he's going to do, which is dismiss them, because they are unconstitutional articles of impeachment. That's what they're going to say, and that's what they're going to end up doing at the end of this, and it takes 3 hours to get there. Before that, though, they have to be sworn in as the jurors.
At this time, I will administer the oath to all senators in the chamber in conformance with the Article 1, Section 3, Clause 6 of the Constitution and the Senate's impeachment rules. Will all senators now stand and raise their right hands? Do you solemnly swear that in all things appertaining to the trial of the impeachment of Alejandro N. Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security, now pending, you will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws, so help you God?
So all 100 senators said, I do, but we know now that 51 of them didn't. They didn't even hear the evidence. Eventually, the Republicans kept objecting, and they tried to put a motion to go behind closed doors to hear the evidence. They would come back in 2 weeks and then have the hearing in public. There were some motions to start it January 6, 2024, one day after the election. So they did several of those back and forth, and of course, they went nowhere because the Republicans don't have the power in the Senate. And again, that brings us to the important part of the 2024 election. There are 23 of these Democrats, of the 51, that are defending their seats. And there are some vulnerable positions. West Virginia is a state that will go to the Republicans. Jim Justice, who is the governor in West Virginia, he's going to win that. So now we're at 50-50. John Tester, he's in Montana. He's in a fight for his life. His decision and what he did in this impeachment may have a huge effect on November 5th, 2024 election in Montana. John Tester may have just sealed his fate. So now we're at 52-48. We need to keep getting going. We need to get that to about 55-56. But you can see how important having the power in the Senate is, because now if in the future, if the Democrats have the majority in the House and they want to impeach somebody, they bring it to the Senate. The Senate, guess what? They can just say, we're not going to hear it. We are going to put a motion to dismiss, and we are going to say that these articles are unconstitutional. And what can anybody do? No one can do anything. The precedent has been set. So how did it end? This is the way it ended.
The Senate, sitting as a court of impeachment, stands adjourned, sine die. Majority Leader is recognized.
For the information of members, there are no further votes today. Now, I remind all members that we have very serious business ahead of us.
And that serious business he's talking about is going to be the $95 billion national Security Supplement, which includes $50 billion to Ukraine. That's the important stuff that they want to get to. They don't want to deal with the decisions the Biden administration has made on the border that have seen over 150,000 Americans die due to fentanyl overdoses. They don't want to talk about that. They don't want to talk about Lake and Riley. They don't want to talk about the fact that over 180 countries are represented by those that have come across the border. And over, by the way, 24,000 Chinese nationals have come across in the last 6 months. Last year, that number was about 22,000. So just in the last 6 months, or the first half of this fiscal year, more Chinese nationals, most of them young men, have come across the southern border than they did in the entire 2023 fiscal year. So that's not what they want to deal with. They don't want to deal with those problems. And this border problem is a huge problem for most Americans. That's what's polling. The polling data shows this is the number one issue going into the election. That and then the economy. Both of them, Joe Biden has put us in both of those situations. A terrible economy because of Bidenomics and because of energy dependence around the world and the Green New Energy Deal that has made us dependent on other countries to get our energy. And then what they've done at the border. It's destroying this country, and it's going to be important in the 24 election.
I will tell you this. If you believe that it would have been illegal for Joe Biden to take $5 million from Ukraine, it certainly would have been. What do you think about Donald Trump taking more than $5 million from the Chinese government while he was president?
That's Jamie Raskin, and he's getting into it now with Jamie Comer. And this is a hearing about a Biden impeachment. Where do you think this impeachment for Joe Biden is going? You just saw where Mayorkas went. And if you think that Joe Biden is going anywhere, you're crazy at this point. We're getting really close to the election. I'm not sure this is the energy that the Republicans need to be spending. I'm not sure this is the political capital that they should invest in at this point in this year in an election cycle. But let's listen to Jamie Comer respond to Jamie Raskin.
We know that Donald Trump had a legitimate business that he talked about and he campaigned
on. The legitimate business was the White House. He sold the White House.
Give me a break.
He was president.
What business were the Bidens in? Well, what business did Joe Biden's family own? What business were they in? Did they have hotels? Did they have a social media company? Did they have golf courses? Did they have casinos? Did they have office
buildings? Mr. Chairman,
what business?
Jamie Raskin can't answer him. He's just sitting there with a befuddled look on his face. Again, the Biden family, 20 shell companies, millions of dollars from countries like China, Russia, Ukraine. You know the story. But is it going to go anywhere? Absolutely not. Are the American people even seeing this? No, they're not. It's not on mainstream media. And like I said about the polling data, it's probably not that important to them. It really isn't, unfortunately. It's treason. That's what it is. We have a treasonous president and an administration, but it really doesn't matter. The border does matter, and so does the economy. Here's a little bit more of this exchange between Jamie Raskin and Jim Comer.
Number two, I would like my time restored. And number three,
no, you have
not identified a single crime. Well, what is the crime that you want to impeach Joe Biden for and keep this nonsense going? Well, why? What is the crime? Tell America right now.
You're about to find out very soon.
Name it.
Chair now recognizes
a propaganda experiment.
It's great to know they are the adults in the room running the country, the representatives there going at each other. It seems like that's all they can do, and we still have all these problems out here in America. Are we ever going to get them solved with that going on all the time? There was another interesting part of a hearing while we're on the Bidens. This had to do with Hunter Biden and more specifically about the strategic oil reserve. If you remember, Joe Biden sold off the oil reserve and he said he was going to replenish. And then a couple of weeks ago, he announced they've kind of scratched that idea, threw that out the door. Let's go back to Donald Trump's presidency when he was going to fill the strategic oil reserve with $10, $15, $20 a barrel oil. Now it's at $85, and they have no intentions to increase what is supposed to be in that reserve. That reserve is down to the lowest level it's been since the early 80s. I just wrote an article about this the other day. You can find it in the archives there. If you go to AmericaOutloud.news and go to The Truth Be Told with Booker Scott and go down a couple of articles and you'll see it and you can read about it. It has to do with Iran making so much money by selling oil to China as China increases their oil reserves, and Iran has made about $100 billion more than they would have under the Trump sanctions. That's what the article's about. But now this was an interesting question right here. Let's listen.
And I want to point out that around 900,000 barrels of oil were sold to UNIPEC America, a subsidiary of the Chinese government-owned gas company Sinopec, which in turn had received billions of dollars from BHR Partners. Who is BHR Partners? BHR Partners is a private equity firm co-founded by Hunter Biden, who held a 10% stake. Were you aware that Hunter Biden benefited from the sale of our strategic petroleum reserve by an affiliated Chinese company?
Nothing really surprises us anymore when it comes to the Bidens, and especially Hunter Biden, does it? I mean, the things that they have done, the things that they continue to get away with, it doesn't surprise us. There was another hearing, and this was with Merrick Garland. Senator John Kennedy had the opportunity to ask him questions. Again, this is about Hunter Biden.
Mr. Hunter Biden did not pay taxes on $1 million in 2014 and 2015. And he deducted payments from his income tax for personal expenses when he did file. For hookers, for a Lamborghini, for strip clubs, for sex clubs, for porn website memberships. Why did the Department of Justice let the statute of limitations run?
As you well know, Senator.
So you can't prosecute?
As you well know, Senator, that investigation is being conducted by Mr. Weiss, who was appointed by President Trump to be the U.S. Attorney in Delaware. Much of the investigation you're talking about occurred during the previous administration under Mr. Weiss. Mr. Weiss has continued his investigations. It's now a special counsel. He will issue a report which will explain those.
So are you saying it's Trump's fault?
Which will explain. No, I don't know whether there's fault or not. Mr. Weiss will explain this in his report.
But we can't. Mr. Hunter Biden walks free on not paying taxes on $1 million from 2014 and 15 because the Department of Justice let it happen, right?
I'm not going to comment on decisions made in a pending investigation. In the end, Mr. Weiss will issue a report. I will provide the report to Congress. You'll be able to question Mr. Weiss as to his reasoning, and he will be able to defend his reasoning.
Would you come with Mr. Weiss when he does that?
I'm not going to know the intricacies of Mr. Weiss' investigation. There would be no point. It's Mr. Weiss who's responsible for this investigation.
But you were head of the Department of Justice.
Yes, and I've appointed him as special counsel so that he can independently investigate this matter.
And like I said, it doesn't really matter what Hunter did. He's going to walk away free. He's walking free right now, even though he walked away from a subpoena in Congress. Peter Navarro of the Trump administration, he is sitting in prison right now because he did walk away from a subpoena, just like Hunter Biden. But you can see the difference. We're seeing the difference all over the place when it comes to the justice system. There's a justice for them, and there's a justice for everyone else. Look at the J6ers. Look what they're doing to Donald Trump right now. This is the America we live in, and I can't stress how important the election of 2024 is. We have about 6 months before it's here. And if you pay attention to television or radio and you watched anything on the news online, I know you do. I do all the time. Our country is down and out. You hear it here all the time. The Tower of Babel is falling. And now's the time to protect yourself and your temple from destruction. And to do that, that means protecting your resources. And that includes your savings. So you can protect and defend your legacy and your posterity from destruction. That's why thousands of good Americans are arming themselves with physical gold and silver from Goldco. Go to BookerLikesGold.com And when you get there, there's a telephone number to call. Please give them a call at BookerLikesGold.com and find out about that $10,000 bonus silver from Goldco. Protect your legacy and protect your posterity. Go to BookerLikesGold.com.
More Truth in Minutes on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, people could spend an average of 12 seconds on a task without becoming distracted. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds. The digital age is narrowing our attention span. Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. And unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top, shoot it down. Thousands of 5-star reviews proves it works. Supercharge your brain and see the difference. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
This is The Truth Be Told on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I am Booker Scott. Don't forget, coming up tonight at 7 o'clock, it is Unleashed, the Political News Hour. That's followed at 8 by the National Security Hour. And at 9 o'clock, it's After Dark with Robin Andrew. You know, as we look around this country, there are a lot of scary things going on. And if I said we're living in a negative world, what would come to your mind? Probably a lot of things, and probably none of them are what we're about to get into. I'm going to bring into the conversation now the guy who wrote the book, Living in the Negative World. His name is Aaron Wren. Aaron, welcome to the conversation.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I think one thing that you wrote in this book, we've entered a new and unprecedented era in America, and it's one you call the negative world. And if you would, just dumb it down for everybody. What is this negative world?
I'd be happy to do that. So the negative world specifically refers to the way that sort of society views Christianity. In my book, Life in the Negative World, I lay out a model looking at the last 60 to 70 years of American history, where we started out in the 1950s, where although we didn't have a state church, we did have a sort of softly institutionalized generic, you know, Protestant Christianity is our de facto national religion. Mm-hmm. Half of all the people went to church. We were adding In God We Trust to our money. We were adding Under God to the Pledge of Allegiance. We had prayer in schools. We had Bible reading in schools. Then in the 60s, I date it to 1964. You can quibble with the dates, but it roughly in that era, Christianity began to go into decline in America in terms of attendance, adherence, and people beginning to question Christian sort of moral norms and moral frameworks. And I divide this period of decline from 1964 to the present into three eras or worlds that I call the positive, neutral, negative world. The positive world is 64 to 94. That is a period of decline for Christianity. I want to be clear about that. At the same time, society, especially at the elite kind of official level, still basically views Christianity positively. To be known as a good church-going man makes you seem like an upstanding member of society. And Christian moral norms are still the basic moral norms of society. In 1994, we hit a tipping point and entered what I call the neutral world, which lasted from 1994 to 2014, where Christianity is no longer seen positively, but it's not really viewed negatively yet either. It's essentially one more lifestyle choice among many in a pluralistic public square. And Christian moral norms sort of had a residual effect of that era. And then in 2014, we had a second tipping point where, for the first time in really the 400-year history of, you know, settlement in America, official elite culture now views Christianity negatively. We're in this negative world, right? So to be known as a Bible-believing Christian does not help you get a job at Goldman Sachs or Google. Quite the opposite, in fact. Christian moral norms are now expressly repudiated. And in fact, in some respects, certain segments of Christianity are now viewed as the leading threat to the new moral order. You see a lot of the hand-wringing about Christian nationalism being very much in this vein. And so this entry into a place where sort of Christianity, certainly with the evangelical world that I am most familiar with, sort of viewed itself as the moral majority and now has to face the fact it's kind of on the outs. And this has been very dislocating.
Well, you go back to 1964. Are you able to put your finger on anything that happened that changed the narrative, to change that period from 1964 to 1994? What was it that happened in our country? Was there anything that you've been able to define?
Yeah, I don't subscribe to the where did it all go wrong theory. I don't try to necessarily go back. And some people go back a long way. Some people say it was William of Ockham and nominalism's where it all went wrong. Charles Taylor, this Canadian philosopher, wrote a book called A Secular Age that told essentially a 500-year story of secularization. I mean, I would say, look, the trends were moving sort of away from Christianity in the West for a long time. I mean, even going back to the founding fathers, a lot of those guys were not necessarily in private, the most enthusiastic about Christianity. But the key is, the elite never really was as interested in Christianity in many respects, but they felt the need to honor it publicly. And they said, well, we need to have this religion in the country to really have a coherent country. What happened precisely in the 60s? Well, a lot of things happened. Obviously, we had the upheavals, of the late 1960s, the sexual revolutions there. Yeah, the generation gap with that, the Vietnam War. We saw the sort of collapse of the old, what they called WASP establishment, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant establishment that had sort of controlled the country in one form or another from a very long time. I mean, there's this guy who was president of Yale University during the Vietnam War, for example, was a guy named Kingman Brewster, and he was the 11th generation descendant of Elder William Brewster on the Mayflower. And so there were still, like, into the 1950s, maybe even the 1960s, members of the Adams family that played prominent roles. I think it was Charles Francis Adams IV that was the CEO of Raytheon, for example, for a very long time. And so, that all collapsed. And, there's just a lot of things that started happening in the culture in the 1960s. And then I think that the next major event that comes along that is really important is the fall of the Soviet Union in 1989. The reason we're adding under God and stuff to the pledge and God we trust the money, it was part of the Cold War. It was part of our competition against this atheist communistic system. Christianity was sort of bound up with the West war on communism. And once communism went away, we thought, okay, Western culture is going to be triumphant and carrying forward. And people might have assumed Christianity would be part of that. But what it actually gave was essentially a little bit of a green light to start rewriting the relationship between Christianity and culture and decentering and pushing out Christianity a little bit. I actually debated whether I should put the beginning of the neutral world in 1989 because of the Berlin Wall. You can make some debates about some of these things, but there's certainly been a lot of a lot of shifts in the culture over that time that really did transform society in that way. And again, it's not that the 1950s was some great high watermark of American morality.
Right.
Probably it wasn't.
No,
right?
No, right. I after mean, World War like, II, the guys coming
right,
back.
There was only, yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of hypocrisy. There was a lot of, you know, people didn't necessarily believe, but there was still this idea that, you know, we had a sort of public religion in the United States, which was sort of a generic, again, kind of a generic Protestantism, generic Christianity. And like now the people who are running the country, you know, kind of the elites have decided they don't need that anymore. You know, we can dispense with that. And, you know, to the extent that we have a sort of moral order, that moral order is based on ideologies. And the problem with these ideologies is they change all the time. You know, thou shalt not steal is kind of a timeless principle, if you will. There really was sort of a moral system that had prevailed for a long time. Of course, there's like emphases and changes here and there, but there is sort of an idea that like, okay, great, you can anchor back to the Ten Commandments or something. Well, now it's like whatever the flavor of the month is, right, everybody's got to like all of a sudden tack in a new direction.
Right. And you see that in cities in this country right yeah. now where they're not prosecuting and holding people accountable for going in and shoplifting. And now we see right. these shops moving out. So you can steal in America now.
Right. It's like you can walk into a CVS with, you know, a couple huge trash bags, load them up and walk right out with impunity. But then again, there are people, for example, that said all lives matter on a company conference call and got
yeah.
fired.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, it's you're more likely to get fired for an ideological transgression in some respects than you are for actually being immoral in some ways, as we would have normally understood it.
You're listening to Aaron Wren, and Aaron writes on Substack, aaronwren.com. Also, by the way, that last name is spelled R-E-N-N, so aaronwren.com. Aaron, you wrote something in your book, "The Negative World Poses a Profound Challenge to American Evangelicals and Their Churches." And it also helps to explain why there's been so much turmoil and conflict within the evangelical world. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, again, you know, evangelicals are used to thinking of themselves as the cultural mainstream, as the moral majority. And so having to make this shift from being a moral majority to a moral minority is quite dislocating. And because, you know, sort of Protestants, Christians were the majority for so long.
Yeah.
They essentially, you know, relied on sort of the mainstream institutions of society to sort of reinforce their values. And those are the institutions they look to. Whereas, you know, minority groups, although they participate in and look to mainstream institutions, always had like their own unique institutions for their community to sustain community identity and life. And so the example I use is early 20th century Catholicism, where there was, you know, still a lot of anti-Catholic sentiment at that time. So they had to create their own Catholic schools. They had to create their own, you know, Catholic charitable groups. They had to create their own fraternal societies. They had to create their own Catholic universities. They had all these practices like abstaining from meat on Fridays or mm-hmm. praying rosaries that really helped identify and sustain their community life in a Protestant nation. And so evangelicals struggle in part because they never had these to nearly the same extent. So that's you know, part of the problem right there. It's a big psychological adjustment, and then the lack of these institutions. And then, you know, the vast bulk of evangelical churches and institutions and ministries were built for cultural realities that no longer exist. And so they need to change. It's just like how technology comes along and revolutionizes everything. First, there's the smartphone, right? So if you don't have that, if you can't adapt to the smartphone revolution, maybe you're an old landline telephone company, right. You're in trouble.
Yeah.
Right. Now AI, who knows what that's going to do? So, you know, if you have like a business or, you know, a church or anything built for an old reality, new realities, you know, force the need for change. And so I think that has really put a lot of pressure on the evangelical church and the various different groups that make it up, and I go through some of them in the book and talk about them a little bit, have sort of deformed, and they're now starting to essentially fight with each other a little bit. And so I think it's just an uncertain time.
You write in the book specific strategies for churches, institutions, and individuals to live faithfully in a negative world. Can you share a couple of those?
Sure. A quarter of the book is diagnostics and the framework and laying it all out. And then the last three quarters are a little bit thinking about how we should live now. There's a lot in that. I'll just give a couple things. One, I think we need to move into more of an exploration mode and be more comfortable in the unknown, because we really are in an unprecedented scenario, an unprecedented time. And the world is just rapidly changing, right? Who saw Donald Trump coming to be president? Who saw the pandemic? Who saw the invasion of Ukraine, Middle East upheavals? There's a lot of things going on in the world, and we have to be ready to adapt. And so we can't just easily plot, our course from point A to point B. We have to be much more comfortable walking by faith than by sight, and thinking much more like maybe the Lewis and Clark expedition, where we're going into this kind of unknown territory and we got to feel our way along. The second thing I say is, again, churches need to be much more focused on self-consciously stewarding and strengthening their own communities, because the world is going to be a lot more negative than it was. And so self-consciously stewarding your own community strength is going to be very important. It's sort of like learning to think like a minority. And so doing the things that, again, minorities have always had to do. And again, that doesn't mean you have to be mean to people, hate people, all that stuff. But you have to think about, hey, how do we sustain our community life?
And what does
in
that
essentially
look like?
Something of a foreign land? Yeah. And
what does that look like, Aaron?
Well, I think some of it is, I talk a little bit about it in the book. I think a lot of it, I think the Christian education revolution is a good example of that. Say, we can't rely on the public schools. We have to create our own schools. We have to create homeschooling, create educational infrastructure to inculcate our own values. I think it involves finding a way to create a kind of moral community that can, flourish and be distinct, like sort of a counterculture from the world. One of my things is, hey, we should not accommodate ourselves to the rising tide of long-term or even permanent singleness, which a lot of people in the churches are doing. We have to help our young people find a way to get married. And again, I'm not talking about people. There are people who don't want to get married, but there are a lot of frustrated singles who want to get married. Rather than trying to reconcile them to that condition, how can we help them get married and have successful marriages and have families? And so we have to just do the basics on some of that stuff.
You mentioned Christian nationalism earlier. Can you share some thoughts on that?
Well, I think Christian nationalism is sort of like the left's boogeyman. Mm-hmm.
I've talked about it. I think it's something that they are positioning for the 2024 election to make everyone afraid of.
Yes, yes, yes. It's, if you go back, even to when George W. Bush was elected, right, people were talking about a theocracy. There's going to be a theocracy about that. People like Kevin Phillips and Damon Linker wrote books, basically. It's kind of ludicrous in retrospect. I mean, I think, kind of evangelicals have never been further away from really the levers of power in society. And so the idea that we're in danger of some, Christian nationalist takeover doesn't seem very likely. And one of the things to keep in mind is, the Republican Party still has a bright future, perhaps, in America. And Donald Trump may be elected, but increasingly the Republican Party itself, it represents a sort of post-Christian right in which, it's not necessarily animated by evangelical values.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's more sort of cultural items and, things of that nature.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, thank you very much for joining us. The name of the book is Life in the Negative World, Confronting Challenges in an Anti-Christian Culture. And Aaron, tell everybody where they can find your work.
Oh, just you get the book is available wherever fine books are sold, Amazon or where your local bookshop. And, definitely sign up for my website at aaronren.com, and you'll be able to see all my work posted there.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you, sir. Fiction becomes a religion. Places where nothing is clear. Sanity and
greensome just disappears.
Chairman, there are multiple members that could yield you time. I would ask that you...
I will have you physically removed from this meeting if you don't stop.
More Truth Be Told with Booker Scott in a minute on America Out Loud Radio.
When God, through His grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutLoud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
One thing I deal with on this show a lot is human trafficking and sex trafficking. It's a big business in this country. $30, $50 billion, I hear as high as $100 billion. When it comes to the border, that's one thing that a lot of people don't talk about is sex trafficking and the child trafficking. And there are great Americans doing incredible work down there trying to save and rescue these children. One of those is a guy by the name of Craig Sawman Sawyer. He's a former Air Marshal, and also he is a former Navy SEAL, and he's doing great work down there at the border right now. And Craig, welcome into the show. Really appreciate you being here.
Well, thanks for having me on, Booker. It's a pleasure. Well, it's at epidemic scale, and the thing that really concerns those of us standing up for the children and trying to alert the populace is the level of cover-up, or top cover, if you will, that this crime enjoys. How many seem to benefit from the way that it is and are uninclined to allow the truth to spread so that the populace is adequately educated and informed on it? Everybody deserves to understand what's happening, and the children deserve the level of protection that that would bring. But that's all being circumvented. It's all being obstructed due to this this censorship of the truth. And it's very, very concerning. And the Vets for Child Rescue's mission really is to inform the populace on the factual evidence of what's really happening to the children so that we can all rally against it.
Where are the customers coming from, Craig? They're obviously, the end result is a transaction to have sex with a child, which is disgusting, but who are those customers?
I'd like to say that you could spot them a mile away and they had some sort of tattoo on their forehead, but unfortunately it doesn't work that way. In our joint operations with law enforcement, we've caught and arrested people from every segment of society. You just can't tell, because evil, which this is, can manifest itself through the heart of any man or woman. And it's an individual thing. People, you know, we have free will to choose good or evil, and some choose to do wrong. And that's, we see literally everyone. So the United States is the biggest contributor financially and the biggest generator of pornography on planet Earth these days. So we film more pornographic movies and we spend more money on it than anywhere else. And that's not a great legacy for our once proud nation.
Not at all.
Due to the harm that comes from it. If people think that, well, porn, it's just, you know, enjoying looking at sex, that'd be a very ignorant in these days view of it, because most of those participants are not voluntary. There's a lot of indentured servitude. There's a lot of drug abuse and manipulation. And a lot of those people's lives are not their own. And the depictions that you're witnessing are not voluntary. And so that's something that everybody needs to realize. By watching it and just clicking on that content, you're supporting something that's very, very harmful. And even if you're not clicking or watching a child pornography, if you're still clicking on any sort of pornography, you're ultimately funding an organization or a company that is probably conducting child porn as well. So we have to be careful what we support out there. And porn, like any other addiction, it gets to where when people start off with a little bit, they don't realize that it gets worse and worse and worse, because a little doesn't do it after a while. And that's, I know that by talking to the child predators that come for children in our joint sting operations that we run. And I'll ask the predator after we've caught him, and sometimes even before he knows that we're about to handcuff him, hey, what got you fixated on children rather than a full-grown, healthy female adult? And they'll inevitably say, well, it's porn, because I started off watching a certain type of porn, and then, you know, fast forward years later, here I sit. So it is dangerous and it's insidious.
It's heartbreaking to hear you speak of this. And I know the listeners here at America Out Loud are probably, their hearts are breaking as well as we listen to this. When you look at the children, where are they coming from? I see that anywhere from 460,000 to 750,000 children go missing every year in America. The ages, how old are they, and where are they coming from?
Yeah, well, we're seeing every age, literally from infant level all the way up through aging out, if you will. For that's in most states, that's 18. But a lot of them are coming across the border now. It's the federal law enforcement agents that I know are demoralized because their hands are politically tied. They are ordered not to stop people from coming into the United States, but to assist them into coming into the United States illegally due to a political agenda. Well, that's demoralizing for a lot of the Border Patrol agents. We're seeing record rates of suicide from the agents that are conflicted and demoralized. And so there's a radical increase in unaccompanied minors that are coming into the United States. Well, what's becoming of these children? We're tracking flights that are run illegally, and that begs a whole other list of questions that I don't have time to get into here. But there's a lot of people benefiting from the chaos and the lack of control and the lack of safety on our southern border right now. So a lot of children are being brought from all over planet Earth into the United States without any parents. And of course, the Mexican drug cartels collect a fee and control and send the children wherever they're told to send the children. I would hope and pray that they're going somewhere to their biological parents, but in most cases, I don't believe that that's the case at all because of how much depravity and corruption we're witnessing. So some of them are coming from Child Protective Services, where the CPS, and state dependent, obviously, can target single moms that are the easier victims, especially if she may be from a foreign country and maybe work in multiple jobs and doing her best as a single mom. CPS can go in and accuse her of being an unfit parent and take her children. And she may not know what legal recourse she has. So CPS can take her children, put them in a foster care system, and then the child then goes from one foster care family to the next. Some foster care parents are very loving and good decent people. Many of them are. But some, as in any aspect of society, are not, and abusive. And from family to family, at some point, what we're being told is these children go off the books. And then once there's no record on the child, anything goes. That child can be sold for organ harvesting or satanic ritual abuse or murder or whatever, child trafficking. So that's heartbreaking. Many more come from runaways. The child predators know where children go when they're running away. They go to bus stations. They go to different places where they can get shelter and transportation, and the predators are waiting for them. And they have a game, you know, whole system that they can approach the child and assure the child that they're going to be looked after and fed and provided shelter and then groomed and then eventually made to perform sex for those services. So it's really a cross section there. The children come from everywhere. Every manner by which a predator can gain access to a child, they're going to capitalize on it. So we just have to become much more educated as a society and much more protective of our children, a lot less naive in thinking mm-hmm. that somehow, you know, it's going to be okay. That, you know, all of this perversion and demoralization of our culture is going to somehow work out to be okay. There's a catastrophic price to be paid. And there's a lot of destruction happening right now. So it's just back to getting to what works. A loving mother and father raising well-grounded, healthy, secure children who can look after themselves. You know, that's the way it's intended to be. And what we have now is utter chaos and mayhem. And it's, you know, it's leading to predictable, catastrophic results.
You're listening to Craig Solman Sawyer, former Navy SEAL and U.S. Marshal. He started vetsforchildrescue.org, and that is vets for the number four. So when you go and look for him, make sure that you put in that number four. Craig, you also did a movie. Let's talk a little bit about the movie that you have that can also people can go watch and spread it around to help get that message out.
Yes, sir. And real quick, for clarity, there's a difference between the U.S. Marshal Service and the Federal Air Marshal Service. And I was a Federal Air Marshal.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for your service on both of them, too, also on the Navy SEAL.
Thank you. I just didn't want anybody confused on that. So, well, we spent 3 years filming Contraland. And you can watch it at ContralandMovie.com. It's a good faith public service alert. We offered it at no charge. And we filmed it specifically to show the American populace what we all deserve to know about the factual evidence on what's happening to children with this whole child trafficking issue. So in it, we interview experts of every kind, national security legends like Jack Farmer, Dr. Judith Reisman, who spent 50 years exposing science fraud Alfred Kinsey, who was paid to normalize the notion of child rape and whose science fraud actually is still to this day the basis of what we call the sexual revolution in the United States. All of these experts, we bring in surviving victims, witnesses. We show you the joint operations we'd run with federal and local law enforcement where child predators come running for the children. When we put up ads offering a 12 or 13-year-old child for sex or for sale. And it's sickening, but it's empowering to see just how quickly and how many predators will come. As one example, in Connecticut, we're talking about a nice area, we put out an ad for a 12-year-old girl for sex, and in 30 days, a local ad now, not a national ad, a local ad, 5,000 predators responded in 1 month for one ad.
Were you able to arrest any of those, Craig?
Yes, we were. Yep, we got five of them there in the first 3 days. So it was an eye-opener to the law enforcement there, because they realized, you know, after the second or third one came, they're like, my God, we didn't realize it was this prevalent here. We've got children in this town. I'm like, yeah, yeah, you do. And that's what we're finding. This people, even law enforcement, don't know how many predators are out there until we show them in our operations. And it's an eye opener for everyone.
How often are you going around the country and doing sting operations?
When we can. We've just came off of one about 3 weeks ago, and I just got off a joint meeting with a DA in another county earlier today, and we're going to set up as soon as we can some more. So it really is dependent upon if a district attorney or an AUSA will prosecute. So if we have the prosecuting entity willing to serve and protect in good faith, then we can run the operations. But there's no point in running an operation if the governing body or the judicial system won't prosecute. And so without getting into a big political issue in this conversation, there is a globalist billionaire, he's a household name pretty much now, infamous, I would say, and it's not a theory, it's demonstrable fact, nobody seems to be hiding it, that this billionaire funds the campaigns of district attorneys, judges, and attorneys general with the agreement that if he funds their campaigns and gets them in those seats, they will not prosecute child sex crimes.
Well, Craig, you're talking about George Soros. And yes, you didn't hear the first half of this hour, but that's what it was about. I actually had the Matt Palumbo, who wrote the book on the man behind the curtain, Understanding George Soros. So don't be afraid to mention George Soros's name in this program, because that's what we're talking about. So keep going, please.
Okay. Well, I'm actually glad to hear that, because there's such a low tolerance for the truth in so many platforms. Some of the criminals are so protected, and so many of the American patriots and the concerned mothers are deemed to be somehow a domestic terrorist just for being, you know, truth speakers. And sure. So I have to ask, how is it that we are allowing such a glaring conflict of interest to have a very anti-American billionaire openly funding the campaigns of judges and DAs with the agreement that they will not prosecute entire categories of harmful crimes? I don't care what the crime is, what the issue is. If it's a harmful crime, how can any country allow someone hostile to that country, even if he wasn't hostile to our country, even if he was just a psychopath, if he's funding them with the agreement that they won't prosecute entire categories of crime, how is that allowed? How is that legal? How is that not a glaring conflict of interest that is of national emergency in its urgency of correction? Yet it's crickets. Mm-hmm. It's status quo. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more, say no more. Everybody's been bought off and down the toilet, you know, our country goes. Like, when do we say enough and start actually draining the swamp and getting back to what is effective and serving the American people in good faith and getting back to a healthy United States where things make sense?
And Craig is a great example of one person that decided to do something to make a difference, and he's doing it. Great, great guy. Craig Sawman Sawyer, Vets for Child Rescue is the name of his organization. Go check that out. VetsForChildRescue.org is the name of that. I'm Booker Scott, and you were told 2,000 years ago that you are the salt of the earth, and salt without flavor, it has no value. So whatever you do, keep being salty. Have a great night. Unleash the Political News Hour. It's coming up next.
There is only one truth. You've been listening to The Truth Be Told with Booker Scott on America Out Loud.